Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Very pleased to be with you this Sunday morning. Coming up on today's program, we'll talk to the man who designed the classic Ford Mustang. That's right, he lives in nearby Tip City, the town where he was born. We've got Dayton Youth Radio and Senior Voices coming up. And we'll talk to Executive Director Dennis Grant about this year's Rubber Duck Regatta. He'll also fill us in on what's been happening at United Rehabilitation Services since they expanded their facilities. Up first, for young people across Dayton, September is a time to head back to school and share stories of summer vacation. This fall, some Miami Valley students can brag about building robots at a new manufacturing camp. The summer camp is part of an effort to spark interest in high-tech manufacturing. Ohio's industry faces a shortage of skilled workers. And as WISO Community Voices producer Jason Reynolds reports, organizers hope some of this summer's crop of campgoers will get excited about working in the field.
Perfect. Look at that. First try.
At the Russ Research Center in Beaver Creek, 30 kids between the ages of 12 and 16 are building robots with the help of mentors. People are sawing polymers and cutting large chunks of metal. It's all part of a week-long manufacturing camp sponsored by Ohio University, Senator Sherrod Brown, and a handful of industry partners. Ross McNutt is one of the mentors at this week's camp.
So they're making a robot base. What we're doing is we're cutting out the aluminum so that they can actually use that to mount all their motors and their controllers and their sensors and everything else on so that each kid can have their own little robot.
In the next room, 15-year-old Monica Guy is working on a circuit board. She's putting wires in place.
What are you building?
Right now we're working on building robots that will be able to follow a color line.
Okay, and what real-world application do you see for that?
Well, of course, there's the world of manufacturing where robots are in demand to replace humans and do their jobs.
So manufacturing, like, you don't see it as nuts and bolts stuff. It's this highly automated.
Yeah, right now it's super technological, and you use all these, like, super fine, intricate parts, and being able to work with them and be able to learn how to use them at such a young age, it's really cool.
When it's complete, Guy's wheeled robot will be able to detect colors and follow lines on its own. And she can see the endless possibilities from there. Robots capable of doing everything from turning wrenches to driving a car to flying a drone. But she heard about this camp in a decidedly old-school way. Her mom brought home a flyer.
Well, my mom showed me the paper, and I'm like, hey, engineering camp, let's go. I'm more focused on the engineering aspect, but, like, manufacturing is engineering.
These days, manufacturing isn't just work boots and safety goggles. It's science. And state officials want to hear more young people echo those kind of sentiments. That's why they started this camp. The week-long manufacturing camp costs just $50. That's because a lot of the staff here are volunteers and college students. Ohio University provides the camp's building, and Miami Valley manufacturing companies donate their time. The program is one of more than six dozen sponsored by Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown, but this is the first one of its kind in the Miami Valley. Brown says he hopes these camps will help change young people's view of the manufacturing industry.
The image of manufacturing for lots of people that don't know much about manufacturing is that it's dirty and rusty and old-fashioned and boring. But in fact, it's none of those things. And at the end, I get calls from parents saying, you know, my daughter didn't really like school, but now she wants to be an engineer, or now she wants to be a welder, or now she wants to be a technician because she got to see things made in real businesses.
Today, campers are touring Universal Technology Corporation, or UTC, where a wide array of 3D printers are in action.
My name is Olga Ivanova, and we're currently printing part for Air Force Research Lab for wind tunnel testing and part for the NASA.
UTC also makes 3D printers. They have one model that can print steel and different alloys. More and more high-tech parts are being manufactured this way, and Governor John Kasich has made workforce training and high-tech manufacturing skills a priority. Back at the camp, mentor Ross McNutt says manufacturing-related programs are having an impact in the Miami Valley, and his students are world-class.
We actually made it to the World Championships this year in our first year.
Congratulations.
So right now we've got five robotics teams in the building, four Lego teams, and then we have the first robotics competition, which is Beaver Creek's varsity robotics team.
Exposing more young people to manufacturing may be the key to keeping that sector strong in Ohio, advocates say. And it's worth noting that the state's manufacturing sector has an annual payroll of $40 billion. Ohio still ranks third in the nation in manufacturing, but many employers say they can't find enough highly trained workers to fill open jobs. And a recent study out of Ball State shows Ohio's manufacturing sector slipping from a letter grade of A to B. The same study shows some neighboring states are doing better. They're earning A's. And by one measure, Michigan has almost three times the number of tech and robotics teams for young people. So the Miami Valley, and Ohio in general, maybe behind the curve when it comes to introducing the next generation to 21st century manufacturing. For WYSO News, I'm Community Voices producer Jason Reynolds.
This story is part of WYSO's Scratch Innovation Series on business and the economy. To see more, visit us at WYSO.org. Up next, the designer of an iconic automobile has come back home to Dayton after years of living in Chicago. Gail Halderman was born in Tip City. He graduated from Bethel High School in 1950 and then attended art classes at the Dayton Art Institute. In this interview with WYSO, Halderman tells the story of how he came to design the Ford Mustang.
I actually started out studying lettering. I love to do lettering. I used to letter all the school buses at school when I was in school. But I wanted to become a lettering man, and then I saw this class that were designing televisions and bicycles, and I thought, boy, does that look exciting. It was taught by Reed Wehmeister, and he had just designed a Tucker automobile. And he told us, he said, guys, everything in the world is designed, but don't overlook cars. So I went to Ford Motor Company.
How'd you start there?
I just took a portfolio up to Ford and showed my portfolio in 1954 and was hired. And I didn't think I was good enough because the guys were doing beautiful stuff. And I thought, oh, my God, I can't compete. But I was chosen to go work on an automobile with one other person. It happened to be the 57 Ford. And so we did the 57 Ford, and that was the beginning of my career.
So let's talk a little bit about the Mustang and how that came to be.
Mr. Ford didn't want any part of it. We had a brilliant product planner by the name of Hal Spurlick, who said there was a huge market, that we didn't have a car for it, and neither did anybody, and that we should think about putting one on the market. And Henry Ford said, nuh-uh. That's what they told me when we did the Edsel. So anyway, Hal then talked to Iacocca, and after a while, Mr. Iacocca said, I think if we had a car that Mr. Ford liked, he may change his mind. So Iacocca gave us 10 days to do a car. We worked day and night, and we designed the car, and we had to do it on a Falcon body. I did one side of the car, and my boss did the other side of the car. And I was the one who sketched the scoop on the side and the long hood, short deck proportion, and that was favored by Iacocca, and he brought Mr. Ford over and showed him the car, and he said, Mr. Ford, this is a car I think we ought to do. And he said, I'm not approving it, but I'm not going to tell you to stop. And that was the beginning of the Mustang.
So you got the go-ahead.
Yep. I went over at 3 o'clock in the morning and designed the rear end on the car. And the next day at lunchtime, we did the front end, and that was it. We had some super clay modelers, and they knew how to help it, and turned out great.
Can we take a look? Sure. Tell me what you have here.
We have a fleet of red cars. This is the original hardtop, and that's a convertible, and that's a fastback.
What year are these?
There are sixes. This is a 65, but these are two sixes, 1966.
They're awfully pretty.
They have to be in here. And that's a new one back there.
Can you point out some things from the original design that you're particularly proud of?
The car was initially called Cougar. And we had a Cougar cat in the front end of the grill. And someone said, we can't leave that cat out there by itself. We got to put a corral around it. That's when we designed a box around it. And the car was going to be called Cougar. You'll see pictures of it with a Cougar cat in there. Until the very last minute, Iacocca came and said, oh, by the way, the car name is now Mustang, but we couldn't draw horses. But we had a Hungarian clay modeler, and I'll show you his picture. And he said, I will do the horse for you. And it shows him here working on the horse. But we couldn't do it in clay. He said, first of all, I got to do it in wood. He carved the first horse in wood, and we chrome plated it and put it in the grill. And I wish I'd have kept that. But I didn't. Yeah.
There's a picture of you.
Yep, there's a picture of me. There's Lee Iacocca and Hal Spurlick, I just mentioned.
So how exciting was this for you? You look like a young man there. How old were you?
Probably 30.
30?
Yeah.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about the car business back then. And I'm sure this was exciting work for you.
It was very exciting, but, you know, it was just a job. And we had other cars to work on. I had Galaxies, we had Falcons, we had Mavericks, we had Thunderbirds. So the Mustang was just one of many at the time. So we treated it just like any other program. And fortunately, it became an icon. But you never know.
It certainly did. And so how does that make you feel?
Very proud. Yeah. Very, very proud. Yeah. You'd like for all of them to be that popular, right?
You have children?
Yes, I do.
Daughters and grandchildren?
Grandchildren, yeah. I have 9 grandchildren.
Yeah. How do they feel when they find out that Grandpa designed the Mustang?
They're pretty proud. Yeah. But they're so used to hearing it. I mean, you know, when you grew up with it, it didn't mean much, you know.
And so you've got 4 cars here, as you said, some earlier models of the Mustang and the later version. How do you feel about how the Mustang has evolved over the decades?
I think it's done a good job. I think the last Mustang is a beautiful car. I wish it had a little bit more of the original, some of the cues from the original car into it. It's got too much fusion in it, in my opinion. But otherwise, it's a great automobile.
My perception, and I could be wrong on this, did they stray from the original design and then started going back to it in more recent years?
Yes, that's true. The Fox cars, you're thinking of those?
Yeah.
They tried to make a different look into the Mustang. They weren't as popular, but just so happened right after when Mr. Ford fired Iacocca, they did that Fox car, and he looked at it and he said, at least it doesn't look like an Iacocca car.
Well, I just remember a lot of buzz and excitement about when they started moving back to the original design.
Yeah. Well, I think that it was smart for them to come back and pick up some of the cues of the original car, because that's what the people picture in their mind as a Mustang. And I think it was a good idea to keep it in the new cars.
You're going to be the Grand Marshal at the Concord Elegance with Dayton History this year. Is that a position you've held before?
No, I've never done it before. I'll be driving this car or riding in this car. It's a real honor to be recognized. Yeah.
Gail Halderman is the designer of the classic Ford Mustang. We spoke to him inside the Halderman Museum in Tipp City. It's really an amazing space filled with those beautiful red Mustangs you heard us talking about and thousands of other Mustang memorabilia. You can check it out on Facebook. Just type in Halderman Barn Museum. I'm Jerry Kenny. This is Why So Weekend. This week, a new season of Dayton Youth Radio began on WYSO, and today's story will likely evoke some very specific childhood memories for you. If you're lucky enough back in the day to have had your own room growing up, you may have thought of it as a place of refuge, a place to retreat from the outside world. And so it's there that Dayton Youth Radio Project Coordinator Basim Blunt takes us for an inside story.
Today we have a portrait of a teenager's room. No pictures, just words from Rachel Kaler, a student at Bellbrook High School.
My room is a qualifiable mess. There are piles of clothes and books and college material everywhere. My dad, Bart, hates my room a lot more than I think he'll let on because it's so messy.
Are there any features in my room that you like or make it very distinctive to, like, me specifically, or?
The clutter, the artwork, all your running medals and ribbons.
Is there anything you don't like about it?
The clutter, the piles of stuff.
Thanks.
You might be wondering, what's in a 17-year-old's room? Well, let me tell you. In my closet is a small kiddie shopping cart full of fabric from my grandma. I think of her whenever I use the fabric to make things. Across my desk, there are strings of lights and Polaroid pictures of my family during Christmas and New Year's. On my cluttered dresser sits a silver ring that I have. It's from my great-grandma. My grandma got married on a Ferris wheel in Minnesota. I love the ring, and I wear it every single day. The red bandana also sitting on my dresser? It used to be my grandpa's. Stashed among these objects are things I don't really show to anyone. I have the journals from when I was a kid, filled with silly crushes and musings of 7-year-old me. I have a box filled with things my ex-boyfriends gave me and from all the places we went. I don't know if I should keep that or burn it. My room is my refuge when I feel lost or sad or confused. My room gives me a place to figure out who I am and who I want to be. Sometimes my room is the only place where I can really be myself. I talk to people in my room or video chat them. I always shut the door so that no one can hear, and I talk to my friends. Most of the time, it's my long-distance friends, people I don't see all the time, but I need to hear their voice. I lay on my bed until my phone dies, and then I have to move to a different spot so I can sit on the floor and plug it in. I sit on my fuzzy rainbow shag carpeting, and I just listen to what they have to say. Everyone who knows me thinks I'm stressed. Some days, it feels like everything hits me all at once. I just sit in my room and cry about all the things I have to do. I worry about failing grades, getting into college, achieving perfection, choosing the right path in life. I'm terrified of failing at these things. Next year, I'll be leaving for college. There will be so many things I'll have to clean out. The stuffed animals that I've crocheted or made out of fabric. The huge amounts of Legos stashed in my room. I talked to my mom, Judy, because I wanted to know what she would do with my room after I left for college.
So I'm here with my mom. So I'm leaving for college in about a year. What do you think you guys are going to do with my room once I'm gone?
I'm hoping maybe you'll take some of your clothes with you. And maybe if you don't take them with you, maybe you don't need them. So perhaps we'll give some of your clothes to the Goodwill if you don't need them. Once you graduate and get a job and move to wherever it is you're moving, then you need to clean out your room.
Yeah.
In the end, I know that my room is so much more than four walls, and that the items inside of it are more than just things. They're a part of me. When I leave my room and go to college and live with a roommate, I won't be alone anymore. I'll be able to take the memories and the things I learned in my room as part of my history. And that's what makes my room special, because it's where I figure out who I can be and who I really am. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Rachel Kaler at Bellbrook High School.
That was Sanctuary, written and produced by Rachel Kaler, senior at Bellbrook High School. Special thanks to Katie Bills Tenney, her teacher. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Ohio Arts Council. And today on Senior Voices, we meet Belmont resident Margaret Frey. Now 71 years old, Margaret is a longtime advocate for Dayton youth, working at Children's Services Board, or CSB, earning her doctorate in educational leadership at the University of Dayton, and serving as a school psychologist for the Dayton Public Schools for many years. She shared her story with Dayton Metro Library volunteer interviewer Anna Umalo.
I was born at Mommy Valley. Came home to the house in Belmont, a little bungalow I still drive by every day, small house, and I slept in my parents' bedroom till I was three when my mother said, "We're not doing this anymore, George." and we moved to a house that was two blocks away, and I live in that house now. I kicked my parents out when they were 84. I bought the house to say, "Go live somewhere else," and my daughter and I moved into that house, and I've been there since. So I've been here a long time. I'm a Belmont graduate, so I'm a student of Dayton Public Schools, and have just spent all of my adult life, except the few years I was away for college, in Dayton. It's a place I can afford to live as a single mom. I can afford to have a pleasant, comfortable home and still have money to travel. It's been a really solid community for myself to raise my daughter and many of my aunts and uncles. This was where the extended family was.
So how was high school? How was life like in high school?
I enjoyed high school. I was politically active in high school. I was musically active. I sang a lot and performed and competed. So I enjoyed high school, but I'm never a person that really says, "Oh, I'd just give anything to go back." I'm a person who truly wanted to grow up. And I had a wonderful childhood. But growing up gave me, it's horrible to say, growing up gave me power in my own life. And growing up gave me opportunities that I did not have at 15. But I was young. I was born in October, so I graduated from high school at 17, and I went to college when I was 17. And I had been accepted at a couple of schools. The one I really wanted in was at Otterbein, which is in Westerville, north of Columbus. It was 1965. And the first year was fine. A group of women were in a house together. They accepted too many students for the dorms. And I enjoyed that, having roommates. And you know, I was the only girl. I had my own bedroom at home. So this was sort of nice to have a shared space. And I really enjoyed that. And many of those women are still friends of mine. But their sophomore year, I just sort of, my sophomore and junior year, I just stopped. I performed constantly in the choir and singing, and I just stopped. And one of the major reasons I stopped was of the war. Many of my friends were killed in the Vietnam War, and so being close to Columbus was a great way to picket and do all those things that politically I felt the need to do. Tragically, the great school of Otterbein thought, you should make different decisions. But they were kind enough to put me on probation twice before they said, you need to go spend some time figuring out what you want to do. And they're right. I don't believe any 18-year-old really knows what they want to be when they're 50. So I came home after I flunked out and spent my father's money and got a job. And within 6 months, left my parents' home and rented an apartment with a friend of mine. And that started me down the path of human services. So I was in almost all the human service agencies in Montgomery County, one way or the other, and served great populations of people. I enjoy every side of this town. And when I was, I was a supervisor at CSB probably in the early 80s, mid-80s, and I decided to go get a master's. After I flunked out, I did go to Antioch and finish my bachelor's. So I decided to get a master's in school psychology, educational psychology, and went to UD and was raising my daughter alone. Library, she would sleep under the carrels. So I'd drug her on Saturday mornings to the university constantly. So I did the master's at UD and left children's services to do an internship at Fairborn School, and then was immediately hired by Dayton City. I wanted to work in Dayton City. I am a Dayton City kid, and the tragedy about Dayton City and many urban systems is many people who do so well and reasonably well servicing our kids just don't like the school system. They leave. My issue is, then who are we leaving the children with? If all of us who know how to do this well, who are we leaving the children with? That just really always bothered me, so I stayed.
That was Dr. Margaret Frey speaking with Anna Umelo as part of the Senior Voices Project. This interview was edited by Community Voices producer and Senior Voices Project coordinator Jocelyn Robinson. Senior Voices is a collaboration between the Dayton Metro Library, Rebuilding Together Dayton, and WYSO. The series is made possible by the generous support of the Delmar Healthcare Fund of the Dayton Foundation. I'm Jerry Kenny. You're listening to WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks so much for joining us. On Saturday, September 15th, United Rehabilitation Services of Greater Dayton will hold their annual Rubber Duck Regatta. That's when more than 20,000 rubber ducks will take a plunge into the Great Miami River at Riverscape Metro Park, all for a good cause to support URS's mission to serve Miami Valley children and adults with disabilities. This week, we spoke with Executive Director Dennis Grant about the regatta and how the organization is better serving their clients following a major expansion.
After having a waiting list for both child services as well as adult services for about 2 to 2.5 years, we were very fortunate that the community got behind us. We were able to add about a $6 million addition, 55% added onto our building, allowing us to double the number of adults and kids that we could serve, which is just tremendous for this community. You know, if you look at the latest Center for Disease Control study that indicated that between the ages of 6 and 14, they saw about a 21% increase in the number of children identified with developmental delays or disabilities between 2014 and 2016. And with the numbers growing like that, we need to be sure that those services are available. But, you know, we're very excited now that we're able to offer those and even expand the scope of the services we offer, now offering counseling services and support through parent support groups for young people and caregiver support groups for older adults who are raising their siblings or their parents even at this point.
Last time we talked, there were some legislative changes that took place. How did that affect your organization?
You know, legislatively, we've seen a shift to be much more community-based, to be focused on being out in the community as much as possible. I think we've also seen the emphasis on employment first. So the work that we're doing with young people as young as 14 years of age in various high schools and junior highs around the area, so that we can inspire them that there is an opportunity for them to work, that there are things that they can do. You know, it's really pushed us to create new summer youth work experiences, to be engaged with those kids earlier on, and make sure that we can get them ready to go out into the world and be successful. I think one of the great things that we've seen is, you know, once these young people realize that connection between what they're learning in school and what they may be able to do in a career later on, whether that's in the trades or whether that's in retail or medical services or what have you, you know, we've seen an improvement in attendance. We've seen their families get more engaged. And that's the kind of impact we really want to see, because then we know that success is going to carry forward.
You mentioned the community provided support and helped allow for some expansion here, but that doesn't take away from the everyday fundraising that you have to do. You have an annual event coming up, the Rubber Duck Regatta, which is quite a sight to see 20,000 ducks dumped into the river. Let's talk about this year's event.
Yeah, well, you know, I tell you, Jerry, it's really exciting for us to have a great event like this. It is so critical that we're able to be successful in fundraising because, honestly, the more people we serve, the bigger the funding gap becomes between what we get paid to provide the services and what it actually costs us. You know, we haven't had too many increases in terms of what the state is paying us to provide services. We're getting behind on inflation. So we're really always trying to figure out how do we make up that difference. The Rubber Duck Regatta is the biggest event we have. It's truly the United Rehab Services signature event here in Dayton, Ohio. And coming up September the 15th as part of the Hispanic Heritage Festival, we're going to put 20,000 or more little rubber ducks in the river at 4:30 p.m. on that Saturday. So we hope everybody will come down and participate. You can adopt your duck for $5 at DaytonDucks.com. You can go to any local BW3s. You can go to any local Kroger store or, of course, Duck Donuts. So we hope everybody will get involved and really support kids and adults with disabilities, your neighbors. All the money stays right here in this community. And I think people need to know also that, you know, we are really good stewards of the money we receive. I know that when we go out in the community and ask them to help us out, that we need to do that with the greatest level of integrity. And we've driven our overhead down from 32% 17 years ago to under 10% the last 6 years. And for us, that really says something about the fact that more than $9 out of every $10 we raise is going to go straight to the people we serve and the services they need.
And I guess let's leave with what's ahead for URS. Any upcoming changes, any new directions for your organization? Are you standing strong heading into the future?
You know, we are very blessed with the support of the community to be able to accomplish this expansion, and we will continue to bring additional people in. You know, there's always that transition. When you build it, you hope they will come, and they are, and we are bringing new people in each week. But, you know, it's important for us to also figure out how do we not just stay within these four walls? How do we create the most inclusive society in this area by getting the people we serve out in the community, whether that's through working or through recreation and activities? So we've been much more involved with the public libraries, participating in a lot of the training opportunities that they offer in literacy and in computer literacy. We've been much more involved volunteering in the community and getting out, whether it's through the Metro Parks, or now we're working with the Animal Resource Center, or a number of other organizations, Crayons to Classrooms, other nonprofits, that our clients feel good about giving back. So getting them out there and doing some really fun stuff and feeling good about themselves and letting the community see what we can contribute.
You can find out more at ursdayton.org. And don't forget, the Rubber Duck Regatta takes place Saturday, September 15th at Riverscape Metro Park. Dennis, good luck with your upcoming event, and thanks for the information today.
Thank you, Jerry. We appreciate all your listeners tuning in, and we hope they'll come see us sometime. We actually offer an open tour to the community. We have a breakfast one month and a lunch the next, so you can find all the dates and times on our website.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And we've also got information on the Rubber Duck Regatta on our website at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958, thanks to generous listeners like you. Up next on WYSO, it's Vic McCunis with The Book Nook.